we're hoping that maybe you guys can wrap it up so that we can take some of your questions. And please, this is by no means the end of the discussion. Our hopes is that you continue all of these, all the topics, everything that you guys have brought up in the last 20, 25 minutes in the halls, throughout the day, down the line. So don't let this throw you. We are back here to answer some of your questions. We were just handed a sheet from some of the stuff that came around, and we don't have a lot of time to do it. So I'm going to get right to it. The first question that we're going to answer that we wanted, I think, collaboratively to tackle that, which is, how do you keep students motivated to continue their activism when they see very little tangible change in connection with their work? And Stephanie, why don't I start with you guys? We got about 3 minutes to handle each of these questions. So
okay, I'm going to speak as fast as I can. The one way to keep students motivated, the one way that we have kept students motivated is to first have everyone understand what I said earlier, that change will happen, but it will happen in a slow process. So I know we're students and we're used to wanting things fast, working on the paper, getting a grade already, but I think that we all have to remember that change will come at a slow pace and that you have to be in it to understand that small change that you see is actually a big change in terms of the bigger scheme of things. If I take the example of Darfur, if we look at the fact that we haven't stopped genocide in 4 years, but the lives that have been saved are a lot more than the lives that would have been lost if nobody was talking about Darfur, if Darfur was on anybody's radar, if people didn't even know where Darfur was, the conflict would have been a lot worse than it is right now. So it's looking at things like that. It's understanding the way change works in the world and the way change works over time that will keep students motivated. And if you're leading a group and you're working with students, thanking them is a big thing. So thank the people you work with. Go through your accomplishments as time goes by, and that's how you keep students into the movement.
Ibu, do you want to try and tackle that question?
I'll skip that.
Skip it. Courtney?
Yeah, I think there was a similar question that was posed about how to continue an organization after you graduate, which is, I think, in sort of the same vein of this. And to me, it's just really important to think about it beyond yourself and building the infrastructure and the organization, keeping, you know, a positive mentality about it all. But for me, like, I know when I graduated, I read Built to Last and Good to Great, which are two books by Jim Collins about how to build great organizations. And even though ours was, you know, 10 people and a student, you know, campus organization at the time, I started thinking about, you know, a year and a half before I graduated, how is this going to continue when I'm not here, and really started to transition leadership, talk to people about sustainability issues, because I think some of the greatest no's that I got at first when I was trying to start this deal on campus was, there's so many campus organizations that are started and they fail the moment that student graduates, and that was the last thing I wanted to see happen. So kind of keeping your mind, you know, 3 years ahead of where you are right now is important too.
I think it's funny, just to add my own sort of line into that. You know, we set the stakes so large here. You know, people tell you can change the world. You have the capacity to make this enormous impact on not just the society around you, but the world around you. Don't let that be discouraging if you don't immediately see results along those lines. It takes years and years. Ibu was talking earlier about Muhammad Yunus, who received the Nobel Prize last year. This was a man who worked for 35, 36 years with his NGO before, you know, it received the kind of public acclaim and was generally taken to be the operating theory in the world of microfinance. So don't think of it like a Hail Mary pass. You know, incremental work really does come up. The second question that we wanted to take was a case study that somebody had written about uniting Iranian and American youth. The question was, my commitment is to unite Iranian and American youth in an effort to find common ground and mutual understanding. Already we're limited by government censorship in Iran, with Iranian students fearing government retaliation. What advice can you give to students who face challenges too large for them to tackle but too serious for them to avoid? It's a broad question, but we kind of all dug it because we figured, here's a case study of how maybe to start an organization from the ground up. So I was hoping you guys could just jump in and say, well, theoretically, if I was going to start that organization or do some voice of God, you know, how would you do it? How would you pull it off? And, you know, maybe that'll help out.
So I'll offer a similar case study at the Interfaith Youth Core. I think you're always working on three levels. You're working on the level of idea. You're working on, that's the highest level. You're working on the most basic level, which is the level of the concrete project, and you're working at the meso level, which is pattern change. Okay, so the question is, how can you do that with people on the other side of the world? Our idea at the Interfaith Youth Core is called religious pluralism, which is very simple. People from different religious backgrounds, including no religion at all, should be engaging one another in ways that build understanding and cooperation. In 1999, this guy named Anas from Jordan emailed me out of nowhere and said, I saw the Interfaith Youth Core website, and I'm inspired by this. I believe in that idea. What can we do? And so I told him, you know, why don't you start an interfaith action group and bring your friends from different faith backgrounds, Christian and Muslim in Jordan, to do service projects. That's what we do in Europe, and that's what we do in the States. Lo and behold, Anas started doing that. And we started exchanging this stuff online. And then, you know, when I saw Anas like 6 years later, turns out that he was leading interfaith service project trips between the Middle East and Europe. He started to cultivate a pattern change. So I think that that's where we need to be connecting with our friends who are next to us and on the other side of the world. What's the common idea that we have? What's kind of a common project that we can do? That's why the Interfaith Youth Corps started the Days of Interfaith Youth Service. And then how are we kind of leveraging those things together towards a pattern change?
Courtney, can I ask you to jump in on this one?
Yeah. I think my piece of advice here would be... I think my dad told me once, you know, you get to be big by thinking small. And you really, you know, if you're looking at a really serious issue that is, you know, incredibly daunting but it's too important to ignore, don't ignore that small steps really make a difference. And the only way that you're going to actually achieve change and see something really become resolved is through taking those first small steps. And I think in the case of Students of the World, I mean, we've been working on this 8 years. We're at 6 campuses. I want to be on 100 campuses, and I want to have more of a staff than 2. I was joking, you know, our staff just doubled last month. We hired another person. So, you know, I think, so don't, you know, set your sights really high, but then also appreciate the small successes that you'll experience those first couple years, and also appreciate the failures, too, and don't be afraid to fail, because that's going to happen, and it's the failures that really motivate you to keep going if you have the right mentality and frame of mind.
You want to take a crack at that, Stephanie?
Yeah, I mean, I'll also give the example of Genesis Intervention Network. So the way we saw it was that we divided it into 3 parts, which was, first of all, we had the idea in mind. Genocide, I think, is a pretty big issue. So if we think about things that are too big to not think about and still too very intimidating to attack, I think genocide was pretty out there. So what we thought about was the fact that, first of all, your idea that you're bringing is an idea that the world needs, and that's what you need to believe in to start off with. So we believe that breaking the silence around genocide and making everybody have a hand in stopping genocide was extremely important. So you start off with that. And that 3 goals were to, and still are, to educate, advocate, and fundraise. So we knew that NGOs that start and are only based on raising awareness is only a first step, and that can't be enough. We knew that doing advocacy work could not be enough because people needed to know about it. We knew that fundraising couldn't be enough because you can't just raise money not do anything else. So those 3 things, letting people know about the issue so that people can give you their support with knowledgeable support, letting people doing advocacy work, because we know that change happens also at a level of policy and policy change. So in terms of your organization, knowing what kind of policy we'd like to see passed and going out and doing the research about what kind of policy we'd like to see written. So the Genocide Intervention Network started off with our ideas about policy, not knowing that one day we will actually be helping senators and congressmen writing bills that have actually passed today. So advocacy is very important, and getting citizens to know that their voices count, getting citizens to know that you will call your representative, you will call your senator, you will call your congressman, because that is the only way they will act if they know that constituents care. So advocacy is a very big part, and then again money, because we need money to run. So creating very creative projects, really creative ways to fundraise money. And again, I can't drive it home enough, persistence and continuing to do what you do, innovating and continuing to do it and never allowing yourself to give up.
I just wanted to add on that as well, because I found myself doing some work with U.S. and Iraqi organizations after I came back from Iraq the first time as to how to foster dialogue with this whole war on terror going on. When it comes to, I mean, this case study talks specifically about an international issue. Never forget that at the universities that you attend, you are in the best microcosm of the world possible. You know, you look at Stephanie or you look at Ibu, you're talking about people who have a relationship, a very direct relationship with different parts of the world that are probably very vastly different from the college campuses they attended. I'm not sure what the Rwandan community is like in Swarthmore or what the Indian community is like in Illinois, but I'm just, you know, going out there on a limb as to suggest that around you and on your campuses may be the best ambassadors, may be the best conduits towards the kind of good or the kinds of sort of organizations that you're looking to direct your time, energy, and attention, and that's usually a very good place to start because they can help you work through the intricacies, both political, social, in certain cases sort of, you know, religious in terms of the operational stuff of getting stuff off the ground. I did want to get one more question. I know Mickey's head's going to explode because I did that, but I thought it was a really pertinent question. We all kind of agreed on it while we were sitting in the green room drinking coffee and you guys were doing the yeoman's work out here. This is a question that came to us. It said, you all started, with the exception of me, your own successful projects. There is so much out there already. How do you know if you should join and work to improve something already existing or if you should start something completely new? How does your organization work with others that are like you? And I think all of us had a personal reason for picking this one. So, Stephanie, why don't you kick it off?
Well, as I said before, the reason why we started genocide, to mention it, was because of what we saw the reactions to past genocides were. So starting off, I think we were talking about it, we weren't looking to be heroes, we weren't looking to be, you know, make history and, you know, have Martin Luther King-like stories written about us. But the point was that we saw a change that needed to be made, and we saw something that needed to happen that was not happening. We saw the same pattern risking to happen if we did not act the way we did, which was to create the Genocide Intervention Network. So that's how you know that you should start your own innovative organization, because you know you have an idea that is not being implemented out there the way you want it to be implemented. And if you do see others doing what you're doing, go out and research what they're doing and see that if maybe you could join with those organizations. If you're going to reproduce the exact same thing that those organizations are doing, maybe you can join. But if you're going to provide an innovative way to do it and a better way to do it, and you know you can do it better, then work with those organizations as well as create your own. And you have to remember, even if you create your own organization, it doesn't exclude working with the ones that are already existing. It actually means unity makes strength. So that's the way we go forward. So when we started, there were other organizations springing up across the country, but their focus wasn't our focus. But we knew that our end goal was the same. So working together to make that end goal happen, and ensuring that you're in it for the cause, for the people, and not for your heroic needs.
Ibu, do you want to take a
just
that one?
The thing I want to say very quickly is, at the Interfaith Youth Corps, we probably actually have 5 people on staff who have started their own organizations, who started their own organizations before they came to the Interfaith Youth Corps. And part of what I think a good organization does is it allows for really talented people like Janan and Cassie and the other people on staff to be entrepreneurs within an organization. There are many places that you might be able to go and start a new initiative or start a new project. And you know, I'll tell you something. The hardship to heroism ratio of starting your own organization is about 100 to 1 and maybe 1,000 to 1, right? Plus your parents will give you hell for it. I want to just close with 2 quick things. One is we tell these stories a lot at the Interfaith Youth Corps. We're really encouraging young people to start their own interfaith projects and then network those. Guys like Frankie are going to start their own organization. Other people are saying, how can I work? How can I be a significant value added in an existing organization? If you go to ifyc.org, which is our website, you'll see a lot of this. I'm going to end with a quick story. And for me, a lot of this comes back to spiritual issues, right? Like who are you meant to be in the world and what are you meant to do? There's a story about St. Francis of Assisi who was tending his garden, and somebody came up to him and said, St. Francis, if you knew the world was going to end at 6 o'clock tonight, what would you do? And he said, I would continue tending my garden. Right? If you are meant to start an organization, if that's deep in your soul, and if your heart's great gladness connects with the world's great need, you got to do it. But if that's not the case, and you see yourself as value-added somewhere else, I would encourage you to do that.
Yeah, and I'll just be real brief. I think that you just never underestimate the power of collaboration, and that's where, I mean, we're all in this room here today, and I think the Clinton Global Initiative University is a perfect example of when you're in this arena of global social justice issues, raising international awareness and activism, and actually doing something about it, you're in a very family-oriented arena. I mean, people want to work with you. They want to know what you're doing. They want to believe that other people are doing good things. And when you come together with this sort of, you know, power of the minds that this is right here today, you guys realize that the creativity and the innovation and the collaboration that can come from that is really unprecedented. And that's why I think I'm just so thrilled to see this, be a part of this today. And I just hope that you guys take advantage of this room that you're in, the people that you're meeting, and really be open to the conversation that you're about to have when this thing is over and that person that you're about to meet, because you never know where that will take you.
Excellent. I just wanted to thank our three panelists in particular. And all of you guys here in the room, pretty much wraps things up. There's a little bit more business that Mickey's got to take care of.
Well, kind of on a, you're still not off the hook because I want to have just a closure at the end. But I want to take it back a little bit to talk to you about what we generated, or what you generated actually from the tables, and what were some of the themes. And I think that our panelists can take copies of it also, because they can't see. You will see it on the screens. So I'm going to start and I'm going over them fairly quickly. You can see them on the screens on the sides. And the first segment is kind of themes. These are common thoughts that came from several questions. As you can see, you were talking about building coalitions of existing groups on campus, pooling resources together, kind of combining efforts. You talked about not only spreading your ideas abroad, but actually go abroad and see what other people are thinking, and bringing it back home to where your home is. You're talking about building your organization through social networking. Facebook is one of the things mentioned, but as you know, there's change.org, there's other plentiful of networks online, a lot of them concentrating on social activities. You talked about emphasizing collaboration, which I found as a very interesting point. There is kind of a tension between kind of getting a coalition of everything that exists, but then on the other hand, making sure that not everybody can do everything together, that we actually need to keep some focus on organizations. And there is a notion that if you come up with a new idea that you want to be the leader of the revolution, it's worth, and that's the point that some of the tables made, it's worth checking the field first and see if there are other people that are doing it and you can join them and actually learn from their experience. We talked about starting small, create programs on a small local level, and address global problems. You talked about creating a global community through shared curriculum and student exchanges. These are kind of the themes now. We're going to kind of what we call the gems, but kind of like specific ideas that we had, that you surfaced. Use a blog to make a pen pal in other countries. Engage people who don't think their skills can contribute. Example, art majors. With creative projects, I must say, art major is extremely relevant in what we're trying to do here, and I'm sure that the intention of that thought was not to exclude, but actually to include. There's so much to be done with the creatives, the creative majors, and other things that not necessarily feel like an exact fit or an immediate fit, but so much can be done. And arts is being used everywhere in conflict resolution, especially with children and others. There was an idea to lobby to create a department of peace and create a culture of peace. I like that, if we can get a mobilization of students on that one. Organize a scavenger hunt with diverse groups, focusing on raising awareness. We have an online international youth post publication, to give voice to youth lobbyists who are rivaling dominant lobbyists. I think that addresses some of the things that Ibo was saying, that if it's not you who are talking about diversity and religion in your campus, it's going to be someone else and not necessarily voicing what you want to be voiced. We have a very short time left, but I really want to get it back to Gideon and the panel to react to some of those, if you have very initial, very quick thoughts. Thank you very much.
Yes, very quick. Anything jump out at any of this to you guys specifically? I know we covered some of the grounds in the Q&A.
One that jumped out at me is actually two, is the start small one and also the connecting with the people you're trying to help. I think in many cases it is important to know who you're trying to help and where you're trying to help them to go to, because help, I think, is a word that can be both harmful and helpful. So when we're talking about helping people, are you talking about helping them so they can help themselves eventually, or are you talking about helping them so they're internally in this state of help forever? So we see this when we look at certain NGOs that go into a country not understanding how the country works, and you know, creating a situation of dependency that's lasting, as opposed to creating a situation where they go in and help that is given is actually help that can be used, and where people that are being helped are helped to help themselves. So I think trying to understand who you're helping and where you're trying, and trying to hear what they want from you as opposed to what you think they need is very important. So when we're talking about creating policies or creating things internationally, trying to see if your ideas match up with the ideas of the people on the ground, and start small is what you were saying. Start small, break down your goals, and you know, you will feel more accomplished, you know, just like checking off small things off your to-do list. But also building up an organization starts with the small things. The small things matter just as much as the big things that you see in the end. So those are the big themes that resonated with me.
There's a relationship between big, medium, and small. And I'm just going to go back to idea, pattern change, concrete project. Any movement that you care about, the environmental movement, the human rights movement, it has a core idea. The core idea of the environmental movement is the earth is precious and should be protected. There are a set of concrete projects, like we heard this morning, changing light bulbs in poor communities across America, changing light bulbs in poor communities in Atlanta. That concrete project can become a pattern change across America, right? That's that three layers right there. That's your cocktail of social change. For the Interfaith Youth Core, the big idea is religious pluralism. The concrete project includes days of interfaith youth service, interfaith student councils, interfaith fellows. The pattern change is people around the world from different faith backgrounds engaging one another in ways that build understanding and cooperation. Right? So go to ifyc.org and check that out. We also have material up here, and we're happy to talk during lunch.
All of these stand out to me, but I think what I personally resonates that I don't think we've talked much about, but this not only spreading our ideas abroad, but actually going abroad and connecting with the people that are facing the problems, not just those that are solving them. That's, you know, with all this, you know, the internet and Facebook communication, all that, you know, we really can become closer as a global community and really have a better opportunity to empathize with those halfway around the world. But if you have an opportunity to go meet people face-to-face, live in their homes, understand the realities of their everyday life and their nightlife too, there's nothing that can replace that. And I think that with Students of the World, what we've seen is the individual life that we've changed, not just in the organizations we've worked with, but our students from actually interacting with people on the ground that are there. It's unprecedented. So I also think that a lot of people think that they don't have an opportunity to go abroad, but there are so many organizations, grants, opportunities out there, and if you just look hard enough, talk to as many people as you can find a way to get there. And I would just add a side note, if you go to studentsoftheworld.org, you can find my contact information. If you have any questions about starting an organization and how to take it after you graduate, I would be more than happy to work with you, talk to you about it, just because it's now my life, for better and for worse, and I would just love to help any way I can.
I would argue for better. Thank you guys very, very much there. Please. Well, now is I'm going to stand up if you guys want to stay for this. You're by all means invited to, but I think they'd like you off stage, because this is the this is where the rubber hits the road, sort of, with the Clinton Global Initiative. For any of you who have heard or have read reportage of what this is based on. We're not just here just to talk. We like it mostly when people put up where their ideas are. And there's a couple commitments that we'd like to recognize here today that have been made as part of CGIU. And we'd like to invite the people up who've made these commitments and these pledges to carry this work forward. The first person I'd like to invite to the stage is Ryan Madigan from Rutgers. Ryan, are you here in the room? There you are. Ryan, if you can come on up here. I'd like to tell you guys a little bit about what Ryan's done. He's here. He's committed to create a scholarship at the Graduate School of Applied Professional Psychology at Rutgers U for students from conflict areas who are interested in becoming clinicians with an area in expertise in crisis and trauma intervention, which if you have ever been to an area, you know is just absolutely critical, or for those of you who are natives of New Orleans and live through Katrina, you just know is absolutely critical. The scholarship is going to be fully funding a recipient's student tuition to Rutgers and the cost of living over a two-year program. So that they can go out and do this excellent, excellent work in an effort to increase the number of trained clinicians able to serve areas in crisis. Ryan is also going to be working to create trauma-focused curricula in pre-existing academic areas, not just in that one school, but also in conjunction with the scholarship itself. And also in support of this proposal, the administration at the Graduate School of Applied Professional Psychology has offered to extend their single-year informal graduate study across 2 years to help that enrich that experience with 2 years of practical training as well, so taking it out of the ivory tower and actually getting it into the places that it deserves. In order to establish this scholarship, Ryan is seeking funding from Rutgers while applying for grants from organizations including the International Students Organization, the American Association of University Women, the National Institute of Health, and U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. We all look forward to seeing Ryan in the future and the first recipient of that award, and I'd like to hand you this placard. On behalf of President Clinton, signed by President Clinton himself, as a leader in the university community, I commit to take action to address a specific global challenge. You have done exactly that, Ryan. Thank you very, very much. And that is his new Facebook profile. Next person I'd like to invite up is Nate Lowenthal. Nate, are you out there? Nate is the executive director of the Roosevelt Institution, and he has committed to creating an international fellowship program that's going to immerse students in the reality of problems that they're researching while training them to use tools of advanced policy writing and legislative messaging to help drive legislation and advocacy informed by the priorities of local actors in developing nations. So very much what our friend Courtney was just talking about here on stage. This is a $40,000 scholarship that was created or is going to be created to bridge the gap between classroom experience and relevant experience, providing students with firsthand experience in developing nations. While abroad, they're going to work for NGOs and local policy or advocacy groups before returning to Washington, D.C. to submit a paper with a policy suggestion. So this is all very pragmatic and will actually serve as change itself. The Roosevelt Institution is going to work with each fellow to develop a unique action plan tailored to the student's interests in the areas of research and activism while responding to the needs and priorities of partner organizations. They run similar programs domestically, and this was inspired to take this program abroad by the CGI itself, which is the larger banner version of what you are all attending here today. Over the course of the next year, the Roosevelt Institution is going to develop a curriculum, foster relationships with policy organizations and NGOs based in the targeted developing countries that this will be applied towards, and raise the necessary funds to provide stipends for fellows, thereby allowing a broad range of students from many disciplines to be involved. The program is going to launch with 5 fellows in the summer of 2009. I would not be surprised, Nate, if you get some applications from here in this room. Thank you so much. Let me give you this first. This is way more important. I dig that you came in sandals so hard, I can't even tell you.
Got to do a little branding.
Thank you. Oh, my pleasure. Thank you. Thank you, Nate. Our final commitment, which we would like to recognize and hold their feet to the fire, comes from Kate Fedosova. I hope I pronounced that right, from Occidental College. Kate, did I do a good job on that? Please come up here. Kate works with an organization called Peace in Focus,
whose mandate is to use photography workshops as a springboard for discussions of conflict resolution and as a means to foster relationships between youth whose communities have been divided as a result of violence, disaster, or neglect. Peace in Focus plans to hold 3 pilot workshops this year for 20 youth in Boston, Mass., Burundi, and Liberia. This spring, the group is going to hold focus groups with community stakeholders and students in order to develop curricula for workshops which are going to address the community's priorities and needs. Using photography, participants are going to capture their commonalities. They're going to learn strategies to reaffirm their perceptions of one another. They're going to discuss social change, and they're also going to begin to craft and communicate their personal and joint visions for peace through images, which, as we all know, are incredibly powerful, and storytelling. In an effort to extend the workshop's effect deeper into the community, Peace in Focus is going to exhibit the art created by the participants for the public in order to help facilitate a larger community-wide dialogue. She's joined by Kyle Dietrich of Tufts and Harvard Universities, who I had neglected to mention, but thankfully caught before I stepped in it a little bit too hard. We only have one of these for the both of you, but thank you so much for committing both your time and your effort to this cause. Thank you, Kate. Thank you, Kyle. So that is a wrap, at least for this part of the session. We hope that you carry it out into lunch and beyond. Thank you so much for participating. We look forward to see and hear from you guys and what you do. Thank you.